And welcome back, everybody, to the Hangout in the Holy Land, the official podcast of LandGrantHolyLand.com, your free premier resource for all things Ohio State athletics news. It's been a little while, so it's good to talk with you. To talk with you guys all again. This is your host, Matt Brown. You can follow the website on Twitter at LandGrant33. We are on Facebook, which you should definitely like. And you can find me at MattSBN on Twitter.com. I am joined here by my buddy and my fellow Land Grant contributor, Colton Denning. What's going on, buddy?
Not much, Matt. Ready to break down everything that was in the 2015 Ohio State football season. Didn't quite end the way we wanted it to, but another successful season under Urban Meyer.
Yeah, this I feel like we're gonna. It's going to be tricky to really emotionally unpack with what happened over the last year. Obviously a lot has happened since the last time we talked on the podcast, since I think, you know, Jerry Kill was the big story that time. But really a lot has happened in the past couple of days. Basically, for one, everybody and their brother is leaving Ohio State to declare for the NFL draft. Really the best recruiting class in Ohio State history, a major chunk of that here is gone. It's going to be this big changing of the guard. And the Buckeyes had all of this really high-end NFL caliber talent all over the field. They won a national championship, and then they come up a little bit short this year. They end the year dunking on both Michigan and Notre Dame. Let me start by asking you, and you can answer this question however you'd like to define it. Do you think this was a good football season for Ohio State?
Absolutely. When you go 12-1, you finish the season by beating Michigan at Michigan with Jim Harbaugh in his first year. I think he's, what, the only Michigan coach in the history of the school, or at least in a really long time, to not beat Ohio State in his first game against them. You beat them 42-13 on the road to end the regular season. You go to the Fiesta Bowl, and you pretty much handled Notre Dame. It got a little close in the second half, but there was one point where it was 28-7. They're without Joey Bosa. They're without Adolphus Washington. They take care of them. I'm not going to tell anybody how to fan, but if you look at this team, even with the expectations and them going 12-1, and you think it's a bad season or you're upset, you're just being a jackass. That's just my opinion.
All right, that's a bold take. I will say this. I don't think that by any reasonable measure that this was not a successful season. I don't think that the really high expectations coming in here, at least before some of these injuries, I don't think that those were unreasonable. But to Ohio State's going to finish the year probably ranked in the top four, top six minimum of the AP. They destroyed a major recruiting rival in a big bowl game. Like those are all great. I will say this. I don't know about you. This was not a fun season of Ohio State football for me. Some of that, you know, to get into a little inside baseball here, it's hard to divorce, increasingly, I think, my fanhood from this website. So I'm a little bit worried if there's a big difference between expectations and performance, that hurts the site's performance. It hurts interest in reading articles and even sometimes in writing them. But really, I think I only thoroughly enjoyed watching an Ohio State football game all the way through, like maybe 3.5 times this entire year. I got Michigan and Notre Dame, obviously, and then maybe like half of the Virginia Tech game and most of the Rutgers game. And everything else, in part because of the impossibly high expectations, in part because of some of the offensive struggles, in part because of some other things, it felt like a slog. Like it was not nearly as joyful as it was last year, even if they hadn't made a national championship, I think. And so, you know, this year, I think it's going to be, this next coming year should be a lot different. We see that already reflected in our traffic patterns in these couple of days here after the season ended, when the expectations are going to be so much lower and there's going to be so many new faces, and, you know, there's not that burden when you're watching the games. But this last year, you know, successful from a program perspective, very successful in terms of the careers of these Buckeyes. Going 50-4 is historic. It's more than no joke. Like it's literally never been done by anybody that's not Boise State. But this year, I don't know about you, man, I didn't have a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a good point. With the expectation level, I think it just brought a whole new set into it, especially when everybody pretty much knew that at the end of the season, okay, you're going to have 10 to 12, maybe even more Ohio State players drafted. Now when we get to the end of it, we look and see they're probably about to tie their own record with 14 kids drafted. And I think it may have been different if the Virginia Tech game went another way, but with how Braxton Miller started the season, with the spin move touchdown and the big plays, and just how much of a production it was that Cardale Jones, we didn't even know until the first series, until the camera panned on him walking into the huddle, that he was going to be the starter. I think the expectation level, I can't remember, at least for Ohio State, expectations being so high, and maybe around the country, maybe since one of those USC teams or even one of Urban Meyer's old teams at Florida. And you look in week two, they beat Hawaii 38-0, and the grumbling was starting even back then that, wow, the offense may not be good enough. And then right after that, you only beat Northern Illinois by 7 points. So I do agree that there are things to look back on this season and be disappointed about. I know Devin Smith was a huge talking point all year of, well, this is why the offense isn't working. They don't have a deep threat. And that may be true, and he was awesome. But you're about to have the three other guys that stepped up at receiver drafted, and all drafted except for maybe Jalen Marshall, in the first three or four rounds. So I think there are certain things to look at this team about, specifically the wide receiver play, maybe the play calling, and the regression of both of the quarterbacks, and be disappointed in that they weren't better. Even if they weren't going to win the national championship, if they would have lost in the semifinal, that would have been one thing. But the way it panned out and the way they lost to Michigan State, I do think it's okay to be disappointed in those respects.
Yeah, that Michigan State game in particular, I think, was kind of emblematic of a lot of the struggles that Ohio State had this season. Some questions about the play calling, questions about offensive execution, and then to lose, you know, at home, what was a really winnable game, I think, and have that take away from Ohio State's lofty goal. Sure, that's a disappointment. The next year's Michigan State game should be, I think, as the kids say, lit. Given how Michigan State's really kind of foiled Ohio State now two out of the past 3 years. I think looking back on it, all of us may have missed a couple of things. Like, I think it was appropriate to expect Ohio State to make the playoff this year. But one, you know, losing an offensive coordinator and the changes that happened there, that wasn't for nothing. I think perhaps assuming that there would be no drop-off there was a little bit optimistic. And then Ohio State suffered a lot of injuries at wide receiver. Paris Campbell got knocked up and not knocked up, got knocked around and wasn't healthy for large swaths of the year. Noah Brown was projected to, if not be a starter, be a major contributor. He missed the entire season. Corey Smith only played 4 games. Johnny Dixon was injured a lot. James Clark never really did much on the field because he's been hurt. McLaurin was mostly a special teams player. And so for the most of the year, you're playing Michael Thomas, Jalen Marshall, who's not exactly a wide receiver, and Braxton Miller, who's definitely not a wide receiver, although he was learning. And to have all of those things here and all those changes, like some level of offensive regression should have been expected, and perhaps we're a little bit too optimistic to ignore all of that. But you know, it's done. You know, I'm excited to see a bunch of new Buckeyes get into the NFL. Is there anybody in that group that surprised you, or do you think that should have stayed at Ohio State for another year?
No, I honestly think all of them made the right decision. Tyvus Powell was a guy Urban Meyer brought up in his press conference today that he was a little bit surprised about, but then was quick to say that he was a 4-year guy who had redshirted and also graduated, so it was probably time for him to go. Jalen Marshall was another one I think most people would say was the most surprising, but I honestly don't buy into the saying of maybe if you come back another year, your draft stock's going to be higher. No, he had two great seasons. Production-wise, it may not be the best, but we look at a guy like Philly Brown, who didn't look like he had a long NFL team, but he could be sort of like that. He certainly has the skill set. He's versatile, and I think under the right coach or the right coaching staff in the NFL, he can be a very valuable piece. So I think that those guys, it was time for them, and honestly they earned it with what they've done over the last 3-4 years for some of those guys that are seniors, even 5 in the case of Braxton Miller. They all earned that right to go, and for the fans that are upset about it and say why don't they come back, they have to understand this is only going to be good news for Ohio State. They're going to have 14 kids drafted. You think Urban Meyer isn't going to go into name your recruits family room and say, not only can I get you to play high-level football, but you see what I just did in the NFL draft? Are you sure you don't want to come to Ohio State? So it's only good news for the Buckeyes.
Yeah, structurally, big picture-wise, having a gigantic NFL draft class like Florida State did recently or Alabama's been able to do, that's definitely a major It's a major advantage, a major talking point there on the trail. I agree. Certainly, I think keeping Marshall or Powell would have really helped Ohio State, given that wide receiver, and I think defensive backfield are going to be two big question marks. But even if Marshall, you know, goes in the fifth round, I like his chances of being able to play relatively early. He's a fast guy. He can be a difference maker on punt and kick returns, providing he can hang on to the football, which he did better this season. Really, really a dynamic guy. NFL offenses are changing a little bit. He's somebody who could potentially play in a couple of different ways. Would have been nice to have either of them back, but yeah, I don't think that they were indefensible moves. I'm happy for them. Go get paid. If you can go make a bunch of money in the NFL, everyone's football career is going to be short. Go make your money. I think it is selfish to really kind of, you know, hammer people there, especially if, you know, I think I agree with you in both of those guys' cases. I'm not sure whether their draft stock would have improved that much. Marshall maybe a little bit, but not really with Powell.
Well, and it was interesting that all the talk was Michael Thomas was the guy who was most on the fence, and I don't know about you, but at least in terms of the wide receivers, other than Joey Bosa or Taylor Decker, he's the one that I think has the highest draft stock. Pure production-wise, 56 catches, almost 800 yards. You don't look around the country and say, oh, that's a guy going in the first round. But you see Michael Thomas play. You see the route running. You see the physicality. He was out in the Notre Dame game. And when they decide to use him, he's one of the three or four best receivers in the country, in my opinion. So it was interesting to me that whether the talk was real or not, that he was even out there, that Michael Thomas would have even entertained the thought of coming back. And if he would have, it obviously would have been a huge boost to the offense.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see what he does. I think that he might have been an example of a guy that would have benefited from getting some more targets. And, you know, Urban Meyer, also in his press conference today, indicated that they really want to be a more balanced team offensively. They're looking to throw the ball a little bit more. Thomas, sir, I think his ability and his polish as a complete wide receiver prospect, his statistical performance this year does not tell that whole story. He's somebody that I think will have a productive NFL career. But those are all the guys that are leaving. Let's kind of transition and talk about the guys there that are staying. I mean, like we can go right into the wideouts, because now that Thomas is gone, Miller is gone, Jalen Marshall is gone, Corey Smith could potentially come back, but the word around the campfire is that it's pretty unlikely he will, since had he not been suspended for that first game, that he would have played enough games to not get that medical redshirt. And I'm not sure the NCAA wants to kind of de facto reward a guy for getting suspended. So that means basically everybody and their brother is gone. So like your returning production at that group, Curtis Samuel's caught a couple of passes. It's unclear whether he's a wideout, an H-back, or a running back. Noah Brown has played before. He's done some excellent perimeter blocking. Hasn't caught a whole lot of passes. And then you have a ton of people who are really highly decorated but haven't really done much at the college level. Who are you excited about, and who do you think plays a role in Ohio State's offense as a pass catcher for next season?
Well, I think you first got to look at Noah Brown. All the talk in preseason camp or before the season was how good he looked. We saw as a freshman, especially come playoff time and in the Big Ten championship game, what he could do as a blocker with that big body. And I think him coming back from that leg injury is going to be huge. He might not be the number one target. Paris Campbell as well is somebody we haven't really talked about. He's been nicked up a little bit. And I think after that Virginia Tech game where he got a target on the first drive of the season and dropped that pass, which may have been a touchdown if he would have caught it, he kind of disappeared from the offense. But I do really think that Paris Campbell, as he's going to be a sophomore, is going to be the guy probably at wide receiver for them. And I'm a little more, I think, glass half full on this than you are, but we talked about the departures and losing Miller and losing Jalen Marshall in particular. Yeah, it's bad. Those guys are going to get drafted. That production is gone. Is everybody that's coming in to play those positions is, for the most part, an actual wide receiver, whether it's K.J. Hill or one Austin Mack, the incoming freshman, or any of the other guys. They're actually built to play wide receiver, and I don't think there's going to be that struggle of, well, are we going to get them the ball on jet sweeps? How do we get the ball in their hands? They know how to get the ball in their hands. They go out and they run routes. J.T. Barrett's going to throw them the ball. I think that's going to make things much more simple for the offense, knowing that these guys are true wide receivers. But those are the two guys that I look to.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that's something that it looks like has changed a little bit with recruiting. Ohio State really had a pretty good stable of H-back types, but some of the people that were more pure wide receivers, some people, the ones that had the perimeter blocking skills, that had a little bit more size, a lot of them were injured or were not able to produce, and that's what put Ohio State, part of what put Ohio State in a more challenging position, I think, last year. And you're right, there's some guys here that that better fit that mold. I would not be surprised if we see more of some guys who really have not seen the field at all yet. KJ Hill is one of them. He was a four-star guy, one of the last recruits to join the last Ohio State recruiting class, the guy out of Arkansas that the Buckeyes beat Burt for. And there were some really positive practice reports with him. And there really wasn't a point in burning a redshirt for Hill late in the season. But he's somebody as a redshirt freshman that I think is going to be in the mix. And I wouldn't be shocked if Ohio State plays some true freshmen. The Austin Mack, just a couple of minutes here before we got on this podcast, was named a captain for the Army All-American game, which is one of the premier, you know, high school all-star games, some of the biggest recruits here in the country. And his stock as a prospect really completely blew up over his senior season, where he went from somebody who is a really good wide receiver to unquestionably one of the best wide receivers in this class. His ability to kind of go get the ball in the air and ability to get separation, I would not be shocked if he is a contributor right off the bat, doesn't even redshirt. There's also a couple of people who have not actually signed with Ohio State yet. It's why there's a lot of smoke that Donnie Corley is going to end up joining this class. We'll find out here on Saturday. Benjamin Victor is another blue chip, you know, elite wide receiver prospect from Florida. If Corley ends up with Michigan State, I imagine Ohio State ends up with Victor. And that's somebody else that can come in there. So there's like eight dudes who are four stars and run 4.4-ish and are above 6 feet tall who could contribute. There's one guy though that's kind of an X factor through all of this that we haven't talked about yet, but might be the most physically gifted person of that group, and that's Torrence Gibson.
Yeah, Torrence Gibson is a guy who today got a ton of praise from Urban Meyer. He talked about how they could use him in a slash role, kind of how, I guess, what the Pittsburgh Steelers used Cordell Stewart as in the 90s, the late 90s, early 2000s. But he's a guy who physically, I think, look back at the recruiting tape, even in the high-level play of high school ball in Florida, just stood out from the other kids. He was a bit slender, but just physically, the way he can go up and get the ball, what we've seen or what we've heard in practice, is just freakish, and that's something where I think we're all going to talk ourselves into it, but I want to pump the brakes before we say, oh, this guy's going to be the guy going forward. But certainly the physical skills are there to be the guy.
Yeah, he's a really fascinating prospect and might be one of the more intriguing storylines over this offseason. For those who have not been kind of engulfed in the minutiae around this guy who did not even play at all last year. He was a high four-star quarterback recruit, the class of 2015. Ohio State ends up getting him. He almost flipped on signing to the Buckeyes, managed to hold off Auburn and a couple of other programs. And he was a high school quarterback, not somebody who was throwing the ball 40 times a game, not somebody who was completing 70% of his passes. And even in the beginning, our own Bud Elliott, the SBNation.com recruiting analyst, and some other people were saying, this is somebody that has first-round draft pick potential at wideout, but I'm not sure the mechanics are ever going to be there as quarterback.
When you look at Torrence Gibson, it sounds like during the season, and even before the season, he was committed to being a quarterback, and it seemingly talked him into the receiver thing, and more obvious than not, JT Barrett's going to be the starting quarterback at Ohio State for the next two seasons. And if Torrence Gibson is looking to get on the field, it's going to be at wideout for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what happened here for this season with both Cardell and JT and Braxton being around, and Gibson didn't want a redshirt, so he ends up joining the wideout group. He gets injured in camp and then has some academic and maturity issues. Somebody even speculated that he briefly quit the team. And I think it was telling, both one, Gibson's remarks, I believe, to Cleveland.com after the bowl game, and then in Urban Meyer's press conference today, where he really went out of his way to praise the maturity of Gibson, how his grades have improved, how he was humbled by the early experience, and how he's committed to the team. Urban Meyer talked about using him potentially as a slash quarterback. It's not really certain what group he's going to end up with. One thing that's going to really determine where he ends up is how this recruiting class finishes. Because right now there's not a quarterback in it. After the Ohio State's the commitment there ended up flipping to Oregon to play wideout. And really, I think there's the only real option here is Dwayne Haskins, who's currently committed to Maryland, but is a very highly regarded prospect in and of himself. If they're not able to flip him, Torrance Gibson might very well be the third. He may want to be in that room as the third string quarterback, and maybe could challenge Joe Burrow for the backup spot, although he's been very well regarded there himself. But if the Buckeyes are able to bring another quarterback, and given that really there's a lot of playing time to be had at wideout, I would be kind of surprised if he goes full-time into the quarterback room. So maybe this is somebody that we see out of the Wildcat. Maybe this is somebody that we see in some kind of option formations. Or maybe this is somebody we see catching some bubble screens. There's a lot of potentially creative ways you could take advantage of his speed, of his agility and everything, even if like the route running isn't perfect. It will be interesting to see what happens because this is a really big talent, but you have to kind of be creative in scheming for him because he doesn't have a clearly defined position at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of to your point about quarterback depth, if JT Barrett gets hurt next season, it may be a long year for Ohio State. So we'll see in the next couple of weeks come signing day what they're going to do about the quarterback situation going forward.
Yeah, there's a couple of people out there who are, I think, lower regarded individuals who might be added. There's a current Louisville commit Ohio State's looking at. There may be some other ones. But Ohio State has 18 prospects committed right now, and Meyer said that they might only have room to take four or five more. You figure one, potentially two of them are going to be wide receivers. Ohio State badly would like to take another defensive back. Their Malik Harrison, who's probably projects to be a linebacker, is a likely addition. And then the Buckeyes are still looking for a defensive tackle. So for all of those, there's really not very much room to kind of take a flyer on a quarterback. And then you're right. If something happens to Barrett, although Burrow just absolutely nuked people when he was at Athens High School in Ohio, then what already might be a bit of a rebuilding year because Ohio State's schedule is low-key really hard next year, suddenly gets a lot harder if the depth at that position is really compromised.
And one more wild card that we did talk about is Marcus Vaughn at the tight end spot. Nick Vanette graduated. He's gone to the NFL. And we see Marcus Vaughn with, the 27-yard catch against Notre Dame. And he's always been a physical talent and somebody coming out of high school, 6'5", 255, that I think we all marveled at and said, hey, this kid has all the physical tools. He's had a few slip-ups along the way. But in limited play when they've used him in routes, very athletic. He's a great blocking tight end. They used him a lot with Vanette in the run game. But he's another guy that can help that receiver.
Yeah, he's going to have a big season because behind him there's going to be two true freshmen. I think he might be the most athletically gifted Ohio State tight end. The tight end Ohio State's had in a little while. Some of the off-the-field things kind of, and maybe some maturity questions kind of prevented him from maybe reaching that ceiling earlier. But he had a great year this year. And then it's Luke Farrell and Jake Hosman are going to be the two blue chip guys that Ohio State signed in this class, but I think the Buckeyes would prefer not to lean as much on true freshmen if they can at that position. The other interesting question I think along the offense, and this might be a little bit more defined, but still kind of up in the air, is what's happening at running back because the Buckeyes are losing not only one of the best running backs in school history in Ezekiel Elliott and one of the best pass blockers, but somebody who just absolutely took every single carry. Like he's dominated the production at that position now for the last 2 years. Ohio State has a couple of options as a replacement, but a lot of them are relatively unproven and they're kind of different guys. Ohio State could elect to go with Curtis Samuel as your regular running back. He's somebody who played H-back, who played wide receiver. He was a running back in high school, I believe. It is the most experienced person. You could bring in Mike Weber, the Michigan high school player, blue chip recruit himself, was probably going to play some this year and got hurt in camp and ended up redshirting. He's a little bit more physically like Ezekiel Elliott and more of a kind of a power guy, but obviously not really a one-to-one replacement, and he's never taken a college snap before. You could go Briante Dunn, the senior, who's been kind of used in mop-up duty the past couple of years. I think he only has 50 total carries over three seasons, very powerful person who's been effective in goal line situations, has occasionally struggled with fumbles. Or you could go with Antonio Williams, who's the true freshman from North Carolina, who was added after Kareem Walker decommitted, has had a great senior season, did a good job in his All-Star game, did not play against very strong competition at all in high school, and there's some questions about whether he's going to be ready for the step up. Who do you pick? How do you divide that up? What should Ohio State do?
I think it's going to be a combination of Weber and Curtis Samuel. Samuel was a guy who was used kind of in that hybrid role where I don't think they felt they needed to get him the ball more than Jalen Marshall or Braxton Miller, even though in my personal opinion, I think he was probably better than those two guys this season and deserve more opportunities to catch the ball or be used in the option of the passing game. And then obviously, he wasn't great, take care of Ezekiel Elliott, but I think him, along with Mike Weber, who appears to be kind of built like Ezekiel Elliott, where he's a little shorter, but he's just like him in the sense that he's powerful. He's going to gain yards after contact. He has good vision. I think it's going to be those two.
Yeah, I think there's a chance Dunn gets in that mix. I would be really shocked if there is a single dominant ball carrier here. And maybe a thunder and lightning combination between Weber and Samuel would make the most sense, unless someone just, you know, dominates in the first couple of games there and seizes that job. But they both kind of do different things. My gut is that JT Barrett's going to be the leading rusher for Ohio State this year. And it isn't because they're not going to get production, out of running backs, but they were going to have a couple of different guys who are gaining 600, 700 yards. And there's not a dominant guy. Similar to how things were with Urban Meyer when he was the coach at Utah and at Florida.
I think it's plausible, but also going back to that quarterback situation, I do think that they're going to be mindful of what's behind JT Barrett when they decide to run him, especially coming off of that ankle injury in late 2014. But I got a question for you, Matt. On a scale of 1 to 10, how worried are you about the run game for next season?
Like a 4. The Ohio State's always been able to effectively get some kind of production. And if that means that it's more from the quarterback or if it's more from other places rather than kind of the one guy that we've had from Carlos Hyde and Ezekiel Elliott, I think that'll be okay. I'll put it this way. I think I have some nervousness about most position groups, but that does not crack my top 3. What about you?
A 0. If you look at 2014, Braxton Miller wasn't coming back. Carlos Hyde was gone. And Ezekiel Elliott, for all of the hype he had coming out of St. Louis as a high school player, he had 262 yards rushing in 2013. I think 170 of those came against Florida A&M. So we saw him really beast out against inferior competition. But it's not like he was a guy we said, wow, he's going to really dominate. And even if you look, I think up until the Illinois game in 2014, he didn't get the lion's share of the carries, but by the end of the year, he emerged into that guy. And I think with this coaching staff, even with Stan Drayton out here, Tony Alford being the running backs coach, I think that they've produced in such a way that until they don't have a running back that's capable or that doesn't put up 1,400 yards or 1,300 yards, I'm going into every season thinking one of those guys is going to.
Yeah, and maybe this is me being a little bit Pollyannish, but I'm more cautiously optimistic that the drop-off in their offensive line production is not going to be enormous, given how well Ohio State has recruited there and given how strong of an offensive line coach they have and the leader that's coming back there. I mean, I if Ohio State didn't return 4 studs for this year, I think they could have played Prince, they could have played Jones, they could have played some of these other guys, and it would have been fine. They've just been really healthy at that group, so I'm not worried about some kind of collapse there. Meyer in his presser today also was pretty effusive in his praise for the offensive line. So we've talked a lot here about the offense. Are there any other position groups, either elsewhere on offense or on defense or anywhere else on this team, that you are especially either worried about or really plugged in for next year?
I really think number one across the board has to be defensive tackle. I look at that position group, and the guys there are very unproven. They got a little bit of experience at the end of the year. And at the beginning of the year with Joey Bosa's suspension, I mean, who are the main guys there? We're going to say it's probably Michael Hill and Tracy Sprinkle.
Donovan Munger will be in that. Munger will be in that conversation. Maybe Draymond Jones might be in there. A couple of redshirt guys from last year. But that's going to be your big group. There's more depth along the defensive end than there is a defensive tackle, I think.
Yeah, agreed. And that's where we may see them play a little smaller on the defensive line this next season than they did this year. And we may see more of those type of rushman packages, even if they're not looking to get after the quarterback in obvious running situations. They may just be looking to get their best players on the field and sacrificing a bit of size next season when it comes to the interior of the line.
Yeah, that's possible. And for what it's worth, I think that's kind of how Greg Schiano's defenses at Rutgers were. His linemen along the front were not the biggest, and I'm not entirely sure that was exclusively by design due to Rutgers not being able to get 340-pounders. So that's a possibility. I'm a little bit more optimistic about that group. I think we basically saw them in the Notre Dame game. The Ohio State still got two really great defensive ends, Sam Hubbard and Tracy Sprinkle. I would not be shocked if true freshman Nick Bosa, if he's able to heal quickly from his injury, either at end or tackle, is in the rotation and making a difference there. Ohio State's Jashawn Cornell, who was recruited as a defensive end last year, he's somebody that could come in. We're playing some marches right now for some reason. That's the autoplay as I try to pull up a quick recruiting thing here. So thanks for that. Yeah, Jonathan Cooper, five-star guy, could potentially play a little bit inside. There's some options there, and I feel like there's enough people who have at least seen some snaps that it's not going to be as stark of a transition as it might be for, you know, maybe the two deep along safety or defensive back, where you're going to be working in a couple of newer guys because so many people there are leaving at once and injuries have prevented from as many people getting game snaps as they'd like.
There's not a bigger indication of a first-world college football problem than, well, look, you guys are about to lose these first-round draft picks at defensive tackle and defensive end. Here are these five stars coming in. Boo-hoo.
Yeah, I know. If there's a Minnesota fan listening to this, I'm like, for fuck's sake, like this is awful. It's just, they have six people at every position who are, you know, top 100 recruits. Which ones will pan out? Rather than if this guy doesn't pan out, we're toast. Which is why even in a rebuilding year with a difficult schedule and turning over so many players, like what's the worst case scenario for Ohio State next year? Like 8-4, maybe.
I think that's absolutely the worst. That things would have to go wrong. Barrett would have to get injured. The offensive line takes a massive regression from even the spotty play that they showed at times this year, and then nothing on the defensive line hits, and linebacker outside of Raekwon McMillan doesn't pan out the way that we think it does with these younger 4- and 5-star guys coming in and finally filling those positions for Darren Lee and Josh Perry.
We'll pull up the schedule here real quick, and we'll end on this for how we think things are going to go. So if you are just playing along at home, Ohio State's spring game is on April 16th. I will get a chance to see a lot of these newcomers in action. A big chunk of Ohio State's recruiting class for 2016 will be early enrolled, so we'll see a lot of them then. I think potentially 8 members of what should be around a 22, 23-person class will already be on campus. Buckeyes open with 2 home games against Bowling Green and Tulsa, both made bowl games. Bowling Green's working in a new coach, but they have some dynamite wide receivers. Neither of those teams are bad, although it would be really a catastrophe for Ohio State to lose either of them. Like, I could see both of them being uncomfortable in the third quarter, but Ohio State should win. But the big game is the third game of the season. That's a road trip at likely preseason top 5 Oklahoma. I think that's probably a loss. What do you think?
I think so, too. You go into a place like OU against a team that's going to come off a playoff appearance in, for all intents and purposes, unless you want to throw Baylor there, should probably be the playoff favorite from the Big 12. Baker Mayfield coming back. I think Samaje Perine's coming back. Joe Mixon. A lot of talent still at OU, and that's going to be a young Ohio State team's first big game. So on paper, I think it's probably a loss.
Yeah. Oklahoma's going to have some potential question marks in the secondary, but I would agree. That should be a close game, but one I would expect the Sooners to come away with.
If they win, what happens to the expectation?
If they win at that point, then it's this is a playoff team or one who should be contending for a playoff team. I'm guessing Ohio State's going to like be between the preseason like 8 to 13 range. And at that point, then, yeah, you're looking at the class of the Big Ten and going forward from there. The Big Ten schedule this year is much harder than it has been the last 2 years. One, we're switching to a 9-game conference schedule. And the I think Ohio State has drawn maybe the second hardest possible crossover slate. So the Big Ten schedule opens up relatively easily. You got back-to-back home games against Rutgers. Chris Ash, you know, new coach, replacing a bunch of talent. Rutgers is probably going to be trash. Indiana at home. Indiana's losing a couple of their best offensive players. They, I don't think, are going to be very good either. But then you have a back-to-back road trips at Wisconsin, at Penn State. Penn State game will almost certainly be at night. Wisconsin breaking in a new quarterback, breaking in some new defensive players. We don't know how good their coaching staff's going to be since their DC's leaving, but that's always a really tough place to play. I would not be shocked if Ohio State splits those games. Those are both going to be difficult. And then after that, you have back-to-back home games, Northwestern and Nebraska. Northwestern, a team that finished, you know, the 110 games. Analytics didn't think they were very good at all. They're losing a bunch from their defense. Not overly worried about that game, even though Northwestern has an excellent running back. And then Nebraska, who sucked this year. but they can't possibly lose that many close games again, and they should be bringing in a really solid recruiting class. And then your last three, at Maryland, at Michigan State, home for Michigan. I could easily see two Big Ten losses in that group.
I agree with you, but I'm a lot more bullish, not only on this group, but also on this schedule. Outside of what's sure to be a probably 65-50 game against Indiana in the horseshoe for whatever reason. But you look at those four teams, at Wisconsin, at Penn State, at Michigan State, Michigan, all four of those teams are going to be breaking in new quarterbacks. I look at Jim Harbaugh and whoever the quarterback is, I think Alex Malzone or whoever they decide.
John O'Korn.
John O'Korn, yeah. Those guys will be ready to go. Jim Harbaugh has enough history with quarterbacks that by the end of the season, if he made Jake Rudock look like a good quarterback, whoever they have there is probably going to be pretty good by the end of the year. But it's not like they haven't won at Wisconsin in past years. We've seen Meyer only go in there once, but they came out with a win. And at this point, I think Penn State, until they prove it on the field, doesn't really worry me. I know it's going to be, like you said, a night game, and that atmosphere is always charged up when Ohio State goes in there. But Meyer's long said that he prefers his team to be hungry, motivated, to have that kind of vibe where they go out there and take it. And we've got a long offseason, but we talk about the expectations of the past week. I don't think that this current 2016 squad going forward is going to have that. And I do think that they would be extremely motivated. And those environments are the environments that I think Meyer and his team kind of thrive off of. So I think that at worst, it'll be a two-loss Big Ten conference season, but and maybe this is something we can get into at the end. Until somebody really knocks them off, I'm assuming that at the moment they're losing one Big Ten game.
Yeah, it's hopefully it's not against Michigan. I'm sure we're going to talk about this a lot more over the offseason as we get a better idea for who else is leaving for the NFL, who's injured as we get closer to the spring. But it's definitely going to be interesting. There's not a whole lot of sure things here, and there's some potentially really interesting games here moving forward. We're running a little bit long here, so we should wrap this up. Colton, thank you for taking some time to chat with us. You can follow the show again on Twitter, on Facebook. We are all over the place. Colton, real quick, where can we folks find you on Twitter?
You can find me at DubsCo, DubsCo, and also on the Land Grant Twitter, and also doing some social work for the Land Grant Holy Land Facebook.
That's right. If you see a Facebook post on Land Grant that's particularly fire, it was probably Colton. I probably didn't do it. he's better at this than I am, and Luke's probably better at it than I am too. Anyway, everyone, thank you here so much for listening. Enjoy the offseason, enjoy the break, and enjoy some Ohio State basketball, because don't look now, they've won like 7 in a row, and they might just be a tournament team now.
The boys are heating up.
The boys are heating up. Look, there's nothing like going into the mean streets of Evanston and just grinding out a win in the grindhouse that is their high school basketball gym. Thanks so much, and we'll get in touch again in a little bit. Roll Hyde.